Like you mentioned, I'll be talking about tomato today, and specifically about screening for resistance to target spot. So, jump in. Target spot is a disease caused by the pathogen Cornuspora caseicola. It can be a severe problem in tomato. It emerged in Florida in the 1970s. It's been largely controlled by cultural practices, by pesticide applications. The disease really loves high humidity, really loves warm temperatures, which makes it a great place in Florida for it. And it likes long periods of leaf wetness for spores to germinate. When they do, you can get outbreaks of disease that can take off pretty quickly. It can cause lots of defoliation. That's not good for fruit protection. That's not good for yield. But you also get lesions on the fruit, which are especially bad for marketability. All right, so the lesions form these concentric rings, and then oftentimes you get a crack in the middle of that lesion, a star-shaped crack, very indicative target spot. But you can get these pinpoint lesions, such as down the lower picture, that may not even be recognizable during packing at the packing house. You end up with a lot of fruit like this in a box. The lesions grow. You end up with a box of melted tomatoes. Consumers aren't usually happy to receive those. All right. In recent years, growers have reported having a lot of difficulty controlling target spot with their typical pesticide applications. And especially in year 2014, there were some major losses to this disease. Plants were largely defoliated, and it was difficult to find any fruit at all in some fields that were still marketable, not infected by the pathogen. This prompted us to apply for a specialty crop block grant in the Florida program to investigate target spot. From my perspective, I was looking at it from the resistance standpoint. We don't have any resistance in our cultivars right now. And then working alongside with some pathologists, Gary Vallad and Matthews Parrott and Pam Roberts, who are looking at cultural practices, looking at pesticide control measures. How can we manage this disease? On the pathology side of things, they started to look at diversity of the pathogen. They collected lots of isolates all around the state, and just from what they looked like in the plate, you could see a lot of diversity there. They did experiments on a subset of these on some seedlings, using seedling assays, and showed that some isolates are much more aggressive in causing disease severity than others. Isolates such as numbers 20 and 19, always on that severe end of the scale. Isolates number 4 and 27, always on the lower end of that scale. So we see a wide range in aggressiveness on seedlings. We see similar trends on fruit. Some isolates, such as 2 and 4, don't even infect round fruit, just plum fruit. Others, like isolate number 10, doesn't infect fruit at all. We see it on seedlings, on the foliage, but not on the fruit. Lots of differences out there. What exactly is causing all of these have caused disease problems for the growers. Which of these should we be breeding for? Should we be breeding resistance to? Things we need to look at. The most disturbing part of the data that came out of Dr. Vallad's lab was when he looked at fungicide resistance. And he found that there was actually a lot of fungicide resistance among this collection of isolates and a lot of cross resistance to multiple families of fungicides. Not good for the growers, and really emphasizing our need for incorporating host resistance into our varieties. This is not the first time we've looked at this. Back in 2011, Gary Vallad's lab received a germplasm screening grant funding to look at this. He screened about 150 accessions looking for some resistance, doing these seedling disease screens. And he used one of the only sources of resistance reported in the literature as one of his lines, the PI120265, which was reported out of Florida, out of University of Florida back in 1973. Saw some variation in responses. Some lines had pretty good resistance. Some lines had susceptibility on foliar and stem lesions. Other accessions showed pretty severe stem lesions, but not foliar lesions. Those accessions that showed the most potential as sources of resistance are listed here. So we got a few different species. The good thing is there's a couple there that I can actually cross with easily, Pipnolifolium and Galapagensis. Habricates, not so much. Those other ones, Peruvianum and Chilensis, those would require embryo rescue if I were going to try to do hybridization there. The PI120265 didn't turn out too well. It just showed a moderate response there, but not highly resistant. So not something that I would pursue in my program. I wasn't quite happy with this, so I've got two accessions I can really work with. I wanted to go a little bit further and screen some additional accessions, screen some other things in that Pipnolifolium, Chismanii, Galapagensis families that I can cross with very easily. And so this is what we were going to do, and we were going to do our disease evaluations similarly. So we've got our containers there to maintain high humidity. We inoculated our transplants at about 10 weeks old or so with a 10 to the 4th spores per mil inoculum. This is a 3-isolate cocktail of inoculum there with a range in aggressiveness of those isolates. And then we rated our plants thereafter on a 1 to 10 scale, which corresponded directly to percentages of disease, or a 0 to 10 scale, 0% up to 100%. We did these screens across three seasons, three time points. We started in spring of last year, and that's when I screened the most numbers of accessions. I had 83 in that. This was more of a high-throughput screen. I kept the plants in the transplant trays, so pretty small plugs. And we did 2 replications, 8 plants each. As a follow-up to that, we made cuttings from our most resistant plants, and I did a screen of the cuttings that fall. And that was a little bit more of a formal experiment there. So we had 9 cuttings per replication, and we repeated that twice. And then this spring, I'll show the results of that last, where we expanded it. We kept those same 12 that had resistance, and then we added some other accessions there, too, that were sort of in the middle. That first screen we did on transplants, we got some really great results. Some of our accessions turned out almost clean, hardly any disease at all. Our commercial controls that we used in this experiment, Sanibel, Florida 47, almost completely defoliated, up around the 80 to 100% disease level. Here's a Pipnolifolium accession, 2173 did well, 2093 did well. Here's a chart summarizing those results. Given the variation we had in our trays from container to container and from time point to time point, we really just came up with an average score of resistant, moderately resistant, susceptible, moderately susceptible. And so for that follow-up screen, I wanted to focus just on the more resistant of the bunch. So I picked out some moderately resistant ones and some of the most resistant ones. Those errors are highlighting the 2 accessions that go back to that 2011 screen. So we are finding some consistency there from the accessions that Gary Vlad identified. The screen of cuttings was also very good. We got high levels of disease in our controls. This is Tribeca, one of our susceptibles in this experiment. And 16-17 was one of our new accessions we found. We did a ranked mean analysis, which is good for ordinal data analysis, and got some really great separations here. Again, Tribeca, Florida 8059 is the dotted line across the top. Those are our 2 susceptible controls. And every single thing we tested, all 12 of these were better than susceptible. But we find some accessions that are even better than those. So I'm finding this pretty encouraging. The species there are given at the bottom, and we're seeing that most of these that I'm looking at now are those that I can cross with pretty easily, Chismanii, Pipnolifolium. I'm not as interested in the purple bar, the Habricates. It's a little more challenging to work with. A couple more pictures from that screen of those cuttings. So really encouraging. And then one last experiment we did this spring. We expanded our number, brought in a few more of those accessions from the 2011 screen where some candidate sources of resistance were identified. These bars that are colored right now are the ones from the previous 12 that we tested before. Except for one accession, we see a red arrow down there. It became more susceptible in this screen. Another accession became more resistant in this screen. Otherwise, everything played out really well. A lot of consistency between fall 2017, spring 2018. If we look at all of these together, again, lots of pink, lots of light blue in here on the right side of that graph. Those are the ones I'm wanting to pursue. Again, we can cross with these very readily with cultivated tomato. In fact, we've already begun crossing pretty much everything on the right side of this graph. We've got F1s for them. We've developed a few F2s. Here's some results from the F1s. Those are the five accessions that go back to the 2011 screen. Some of them not so great, a couple of them very good. Again, I'm most interested in that Galapagensia accession on the right. Here are some results from the F1s that we had in the same trial this spring. And so each color represents a different accession. And then pretty much across the graph, the lower bar is the LA accession number, and the higher bar is the F1 there. And so what we're finding here is it doesn't look like I'm dealing with dominance at all. At best, I'm going to have incomplete dominance. Most likely, I'll be incorporating this into both of my parents for hybrids. It's going to make it a little bit more challenging to back cross resistance in if I have to do a modified back crossing approach and screen in F2 populations over and over again. The encouraging part about it that I don't have here is I have begun looking at a couple of F2 populations. We'll be doing more of this in the coming months, but we are able to recover parental levels of resistance in these F2 populations. So it does seem to be heritable. Our ratios suggest it may be simply inherited. So I find that pretty encouraging. Questions we still want to answer that we're planning to do, experiments we're planning to do going forward is look at a wider range of isolates, more isolates that vary in aggressiveness. That three isolate cocktail did not include our most aggressive isolates. I'd like to include those in follow-up screens now and see if I've got resistance to those. Compare these in the field as mature plants and make sure that resistance holds up. How does resistance to fruit lesions hold up in these? On a breeding standpoint, I'm interested in finding those loci that control resistance so I can select for them with markers, understanding the inheritance. And we're also interested in looking at pathogenicity here. In fact, figuring out the role of toxins. There is evidence that toxins play a key role in pathogenicity for Coronaspora cassiocola. This has been shown in rubber, and some work out of University of Georgia has found some toxin genes in the pathogen that we could easily pursue and see if those are important or not. If so, we might be able to improve our screening methods for resistance going forward. And those are some objectives that we actually put into a proposal to the AFRI Foundational Program this year. People that have cooperated on this in the pathology lab, we've got Gary Vallad and his group, his team, including Kevin McKenzie. He's a recently graduated master's student that did a lot of that work on the fungicide resistance. Matthew Sperrett in North Florida, and then folks that work in my lab at Gulf Coast Research Center. That's what I got. Thank you. Time for any questions. Sure.
I'm wondering, why did you decide to do isolate cocktail rather than individual?
Yeah, that's a great question. Why did we focus on a cocktail of isolates rather than individual isolates? And the short answer was we didn't know which isolate to focus on, which would be the best if we have resistance to specific isolates or not. So we just picked out three common isolates that were found, or three of the isolates that were located in Florida, and used those. It won't be until I do some further screens to see if resistance is broad spectrum or race specific, isolate specific. The other reason is that we were short on seed for these accessions. Most of them were obtained from the Tomato Genetics Resource Center, 20 to 50 seed each time we get a request. So we can only test so many isolates at a time. Good question. All right. Thank you.